back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, hanging out until 10. Tyler Zulli producing the program. We do have open phone line, 610-632-0975. So we're discussing the latest kind of back and forth, you know, with Anthony Fauci, the infectious diseases doc, weighing in and saying that there might not be football unless there's a bubble format. The NFLPA doctor, Mayer, noted Fauci's statements and then pretty much said that there's going to be football. And actually, in a refreshing change of beat, now I'm not saying that Dr. Fauci should be cut down to the knees whatsoever, but I'm just saying the refreshing part of it is that kind of said, or it kind of sounded like what the NFL's chief medical officer said, Dr. Alan Sills. So at least for now, it appears that the league and the Players Association are in lockstep for you know, what needs to happen in order to facilitate a return to play, which is a welcome change from what we've seen with Major League Baseball. Now, to catch you up on what's happening with the MLB, some people would say not a whole lot, but the league effectively has a Saturday deadline in order to make this kind of thing happen. The Players Union delivered a 70-game plan to Major League Baseball in a counterproposal, and they're not happy about it. The owners, that is. So there was a long list. Check it out on ESPN.com if you want to see the highlights of the proposal. Pretty big counter proposal to what the MLB put together. And it included, by the way, and Tyler, I know that you've been solidly pro-player on this, but this might cause you to jump ship. Universal designated hitter in 2020 and 2021. Come on.
Why they got to do that to me?
Right?
Oh, God, please, no!
Why they got to do that to me? Everything was so perfect for me to just be like, players?
Solid player.
You're right. You're 100% right. Then you got to drop this universal DH thing on me? Come on.
Oh, jeez.
It's like the one thing I'll fight for in baseball still.
I don't know how they found your issue. I don't know how. They could have just not talked about it.
Everything else, when I listen to the casual baseball fan or the non-baseball fan, when they complain about anything, I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. That's the season's too long, game's too long. Yeah, you're probably right on all of these. They should have universal DH.
You shut your mouth.
No.
That's exactly right.
Like, I feel like I'm yelling at, you know, a pet or something.
Yeah.
No.
Bad.
Bad.
No. Oh, man. So you would argue that the DH should go away in the American League
I think the DH should stay in the American League.
Okay.
I think it's what makes baseball unique is that it has a different set of rules within its own league.
Gotcha. Okay.
And they play those rules together during the most important series. I think that's super cool.
I think that's pretty cool, too. I like that. However, it would drive me insane if I were trying to explain it now. So, my kids already are like, they're very young, but they're very analytical. And I don't mean like...
Wonder where they get that one from.
And I don't mean that like the standard kid. Well, why? If my kids are asking why and I tell them something like just to get them to shut up, it is a deeply dissatisfying answer to them. And it needs to make sense in order for them to stop continuing to badger me on this. If I'm explaining to them that the DH is in the American League and it's not in the National League because that's just the way it is, that will be a deeply dissatisfying answer. So I need Tyler there to help me parent. I'm going to need you to back me up on that.
Well, young Torties, the reason the DH is in the American League and not in the National League is, sit down, we're going to tell you a story.
Come closer. Yes, sit around in the circle. I'd be truly terrified, by the way, if I were a Houston Texans fan. Like, I don't think that Deshaun Watson's on the table, like a lot of people are joking. But I don't know who is on the table if they heard that they're on a list for Jamal Adams. Like,
I'd imagine just about everybody else.
Like, Laramie Tunsil, who you just traded for, They don't have any wide receivers left, right?
No. They might try to say, hey, we'll trade you Kenny Stills.
Right, Kenny Stills or Will Fuller, whoever you want. That's not likely.
The Jets will be like, all right, new phone, who dis?
Exactly. I don't know, man. So that is, I'd be terrified if I were a Houston Texan fan. I don't. Here's the thing. I thought DeAndre Hopkins would have been untouchable, too. So I don't know. I assume that Bill O'Brien would not trade Deshaun Watson. But I don't know for sure.
Deshaun Watson, a first-round pick, and a fourth-round pick for Jamal Adams,
and a third. Yeah, and a third.
But got to recoup that fourth.
Is a serious question. For those teams that believe that they have a franchise quarterback, is there anyone that you think would be more likely to trade that quarterback than the Texans?
No.
Who's in second place? The freaking Eagles. And there's like a big gap between the Eagles and whoever the...
I was going to say the Cowboys, but I don't know if the Cowboys believe that Dak Prescott's a franchise quarterback.
They haven't behaved that way.
Well, and you look at some of the guys across the league. In reality, with age being a true factor, how many franchise quarterbacks are there? Like, because is Russell Wilson still a franchise quarterback?
Yes. Yep.
Despite the fact that he's getting older.
Older is not old when we've seen how long these guys play.
Okay, so Breeze, Rodgers, Brady.
Right.
Not franchise quarterbacks anymore.
Probably not.
They're good to great, but I don't think they're franchise.
I would take them over a lot of guys this year.
Right.
But building a team around, probably not.
So, I mean, if you think about it, if you include Wilson.
I do.
Which
yeah.
I love Wilson, but I don't know if I include him in franchise caliber anymore because.
At 31?
I guess so. You're probably going to get 8 more years of Russell Wilson.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's
so maybe.
An era, effectively.
Okay, so you've persuaded me.
Yes.
So Wilson, Mahomes.
Yes.
I would say Watson and Wentz.
Yep. Do you believe in Lamar?
Lamar.
I do too. There's 5.
Anybody after that? Because like we don't know about Tua. We don't know about Burrow. Daniel Jones. You know, all these guys are pretty, you know, even Darnold and Allen are pretty still, you know, fresh.
Yeah, we don't know. Okay, so the Browns believe they have one, right? There's 6.
Yeah, that's probably misguided, but they do.
The Cardinals are behaving
The Cardinals have one.
Right. And the Jets are behaving like they think they have one. That's 8.
Yeah.
Denver's behaving like they think they have one with no evidence.
That's my dude.
Dude, he's Colin Cowherd's dude, too. Did you see that?
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
I can't agree with him.
So that's 9. We might be approaching a time when there are more franchise quarterbacks than there have ever been.
Which is amazing, considering there probably aren't 32 starting caliber quarterbacks in the NFL still.
There's a huge chasm. Between the ones that are really good and everyone else.
Well, and that's the thing is, you get to the point where like that back end of really good versus the massive crater.
Yeah.
Where does a guy like Ryan Tannehill sit? Does he headline like Group B, or is he the bench player on Group A?
I think that he is, if I had to rank quarterbacks, you know my tiers, I'd put him in the third tier. If you're going to put like 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the top tier and then maybe 8 quarterbacks, 9 quarterbacks in that second tier.
So that's probably exactly where the jump happens.
Yeah.
It's quarterbacks.
At Tannehill.
It's quarterbacks like him. Does Cousins make the first group?
Cousins is above Tannehill for me.
So it's quarterbacks like him and trying to
think. Derek Carr.
Okay.
Like that's the group that
Tannehill
is.
They're the headliners of that group.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fair.
Trying to think if there's anyone else that I'm missing. I don't think so. I think that that's like kind of the group. Because the other thing is that I think it's tough for the I think that Baker Mayfield's got something, but I don't know how good the something is. I think that Josh Allen has something. I don't know how good the something is. So there's like that whole undecided tier too that you've got to deal with. Because I don't remember there being this many young starting quarterbacks in the NFL any time that I've followed the NFL.
So I have my list of 32, if I can give you some names.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, so it's funny you say that Tannehill and Carr go together, because that is literally, for me, 18 and 19.
There you go. All right.
But for me, 20 is Baker Mayfield.
Okay, so I don't like Baker either.
I put him there. The Browns, if the Browns had their say, they'd put him in the top 10.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I just don't believe that.
But do you believe that Baker has something?
Something, yeah.
So do I. So I believe Tannehill has something. I believe Carr has something. Okay. So he belongs right there. I'm cool
so
with that.
So then here's my next couple. And the reason why I think the Group A is your Group A might be a little larger than mine.
Okay.
Is because I believe that at, I have Daniel Jones at 17. I am super high on Daniel Jones.
Okay.
16, I have Garoppolo.
Okay.
15, I have Darnold.
Okay.
I think all of those guys belong as the top flight Group B quarterbacks.
I'm with you so far.
The last quarterback to make it, I would say, is at 14 to make it in Group A is Josh Allen.
Okay, you're higher on Josh Allen than me. Okay.
Okay, and then after that, to round out the second 10, it's Stafford, and this is just for this year, Stafford, Murray, Brady, Ryan.
Okay, I have Brady higher this year, but understood.
But, okay, so maybe that's not, I shouldn't say just for this year, but that is projected and then moving forward.
Okay, all right.
Is Murray a top 12 quarterback this season?
Yeah, likely.
Is
I think
he
that he's likely
to. Top 10 by the end of, by the beginning of next year?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
so. Then they have a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I think that they do. Now, I don't know, by the way, I don't know how great he is, but I think that it says something when you commit to a guy. I think that when you go all in, and by the way, you know, full disclosure, I was not a big fan of him going first overall in the draft. But I think he has a skill set. I think that he can play, and they're doing everything they can to maximize him. So I think that that is a very good cocktail for success.
Well, you know, thinking about him going with the number one overall pick, you know, you take a look at some of the teams that were behind him. Mm-hmm. It was the 49ers had the second pick, correct?
Yep. They weren't taking him.
They weren't going to take him, but if the Cardinals traded out of the first pick, because that's what they would have done,
mm-hmm.
and even if they trade down to 3 or 4, what's to say that Murray still doesn't go number one and they don't get him?
Uh-huh. Okay, fair enough.
You're overreaching for the best quarterback on the board.
Right.
And I think he was probably the best quarterback on the board in that draft.
Yeah, unless you like Josh Allen at this point, or Daniel Jones, right? Kyler Murray's the best quarterback.
Yes.
So
and I like Daniel Jones a lot.
Uh-huh.
I like Josh Allen more than most.
Yep.
Kyler Murray's the best quarterback on that list. Well, hold on. Josh Allen was the year prior, wasn't he?
No.
Or was he a rookie?
Oh, wait, hold on. Timeout. This is outside linebacker Josh Allen.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Josh Allen was the year prior. And Haskins.
And Haskins was the other one. Yes.
And I liked Haskins out of school. I don't like what I've seen from Haskins in the NFL.
And Drew Locke, of course, your boy.
Yes, but I still would take Murray over him.
Okay. Nick Bosa, number 2. Quinnen Williams, number 3.
I thought Quinnen Williams was the best player in that draft.
Thought he's better than Bosa?
I did. I thought if you were to say like a top 3, for me it was Williams 1.
Yeah.
And then obviously was proven to be pretty high by him being AFC Defensive Rookie of the Year. Josh Allen was 2.
Right.
And then Bosa was 3.
Yeah, Bosa 3.
I thought Joey Bosa was better coming out of school than Nick Bosa.
I think you're definitely right about that. And then, of course, I'm looking, Devin White and Devin Bush are also going to be big-time impact.
Those were your
guys.
For
their team. Oh, I love the Devins. You know that. 610-632-0975 is your phone number. But to make a long story short, you never know who Bill O'Brien might trade for Jamal Adams, if he likes him. Maybe he doesn't.
We give you the Stidham guy. Could be your backup.
It'd be great. It'd be perfect.
Jets are like, what, are you crazy? And then Bill Belichick does the Jedi mind trick. Yeah, and that's how he gets it.
That's how he, okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if, there are people that say that you couldn't trade Jason Kelce now for Jamal Adams because the draft is over and what are you going to do at center? Which is an interesting, like, argument, especially as, like, if you read Sal's book or some of the other people that were covering the Eagles Super Bowl run, they said that Jason Kelce was probably the most important player on the team during that run, which I thought was an eye-opening statement to make, but interesting to those who cover the team to say that. It would be a big-time loss at this point, obviously, with an abbreviated training camp, the draft already in the books. You're kind of looking to figure out if who'd you go with, like Sayamalu?
Yeah, you'd have to go with Sayamalu probably at center, and then I guess Driscoll, or Pryor. I guess that's if Pryor's not playing right guard already.
Right.
He'd be super unproven at the offensive line. But what's to tell anybody? And I understand their point that trading Kelce now would be very difficult, but what is to stop anybody from saying that Jason Kelce doesn't wait till this time next year to retire? So are you going to wait again to take a center in hopes that Kelce comes back?
You're almost in like a hostage situation.
Yeah, you're playing in limbo and you're not winning.
You're right. That's absolutely true. Zach Ertz is obviously trending. You know who people are trying to throw into the trade mix? 610-632-0975 is your phone number to hop aboard the conversation. All right. Take another quick look at our 97.5 The Fanatic Twitter poll that Tyler put up earlier talking about, a couple things. First things first, based around different reasons, there are concerns that football and baseball will not be played in 2020. Which of these is the most likely? Right now, football playing with no baseball is at 39.1% in first place. Both play just south of 30%. Neither play almost 22%. Baseball playing without football is at 10%. And then, of course, the other thing is how many Eagles are considered untradeable if you're talking about a return for Jamal Adams, the all-pro safety for the Jets. Let me think about where he ranks. Best safeties in the NFL. He might be number one. I'm going to give you my my biases as I look at the best safeties, and you can tell me how far off I am here. All right, so I've got, off the top of my head, the best safeties in the NFL going into 2020. So not like based on what they've done already and everything else. I think I do have Jamal Adams as number one. I've got Minka Fitzpatrick number two. I've got Derwin James number three. Then I've got Harrison Smith. And then I've got Earl Thomas. Am I on the right track here? So that was Jamal Adams.
It's pretty good.
Minka is next. I had Derwin James, Harrison Smith, Earl Thomas.
Very similar.
Okay.
A lot of the same names. I was just doing a quick search just to make sure I wasn't missing anybody off
any
the list.
Any obvious people. Yes.
I would go with James at one.
Derwin James at one?
Yes.
Almost did.
Because of the injury last year, that doesn't scare me away from the fact that you watch what he did two seasons ago, and I mean, he is undeniably all over the field all the time.
The gap between one and three is like non-existent.
So he's one.
Okay.
Two is Adams.
Okay.
Did you have Smith at three? Or did you have Smith at four?
I had Smith at four.
Oh, you had Fitzpatrick at three.
I had Fitzpatrick at two.
Oh, so you had Fitzpatrick at two. All right, so I would go James one, Adams two.
Uh-huh.
I think I go Fitzpatrick three, and then at four, I still think that Tyrann Mathieu makes that list.
Okay, I like Tyrann
So I think
Mathieu
he would
too.
Be four, and then five is a toss-up. Five is tough.
Got Earl Thomas.
Yeah, Earl Thomas is there. Obviously, Harrison Smith's still there. I'm just trying to think if there's anybody that I've just blatantly missed.
Anthony Harris is pretty good if you're going to do two.
Yeah.
Two there. Devin McCourty's still around.
I think that I would probably put Smith at five.
Uh-huh.
But that you could flip a coin between him and Earl Thomas.
Do you think that top three is pretty set? Or do you think that...
I think Matthew's closer than... Okay. Than I think your top three indicates. But okay. I think that in no particular order, those top three are the top
are
three.
Are the three.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know if they're ahead of the draft. I don't know if there was a bigger Derwin James fan than me after I watched him line up at defensive tackle. So, yeah, versatility's big. And obviously all three of those guys can play all over the field, which is why I think that it'd be incredibly useful for the Eagles to do what they can to make this happen.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at products from that school. And just look at the team's success versus the productivity of individual players in the NFL. And you wonder why over the last five seasons that Florida State is not any good.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, there's one glaring answer.
Well, their quarterback play has been rough.
Horrible.
It's been really, really rough.
Absolutely horrible.
And the guys that they think are the answer keep getting hurt, who aren't that good anyway.
I mean, you brought in DeAndre Francois, thought he was going to be it.
Yeah, they thought that he, I remember, you always know early in the season what broadcasters have been told to think. Because, like, do you remember it was, who was the Texas A&M guy right after Manziel?
Between Manziel and Mond.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wasn't Kyler. What was his name? Oh, my gosh. It's going to kill me. I can't. Kenny Trill. What was Kenny Trill's name?
Kenny Trill.
That wasn't his whole name.
Trill was his last name.
No way.
Yeah, they used to call him Kenny Thrill, right?
No. Was that really his name?
I think so.
It was Kenny Hill. Kenny Hill. Yeah. Because then he transferred to TCU.
Oh, right. And they used to call him, yes.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They were like, look out. Watch out for this dude. And then DeAndre Francois, right after Jameis Winston, was like, watch out. Like, this is the dude.
Well, he got hurt against Alabama, didn't he? Francois?
Yeah. Yeah, was that week one?
Week one.
Yeah, rough.
But well, I mean, since then, was it the quarterback that transferred from Wisconsin was their starter for a while last year?
Right.
It was the lefty. Alex, can't think of his last
Man,
name.
Man, you watch some bad...
Alex Hornibrook. Alex Hornibrook. Alex Hornibrook.
Wow.
Garbage.
What a pull. What a pull.
Well, but, I mean, you think about it this way. Wisconsin was like, yo, this Cohen dude is pretty bad, but he's better than you.
So get out.
So get out.
610-632-0975. You think Tyler wants college football back?
A little bit.
Oh, man. It's the Joe Torti Show. Tyler Zulli producing. We're together until 10 on The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back. It is the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, together until 10 o'clock tonight. Tyler Zulli is producing the show as we are rolling on. Now, I'm looking at baseball's return to play. Let me ask baseball fans, because I am a... way more of what I would call a casual baseball fan than a diehard. I'm not watching every day. I certainly will not watch random games in the middle of the week and stuff like that, like diehard baseball fans will, right? I feel like sometimes people who are casual fans like me have outsized voices sometimes when it comes to issues, like sports issues and stuff. And to bring it to like this example in particular, I've talked about how the way that these negotiations have gone between the players and the owners has turned me off to the point where, like, if it comes together, then great. And if it doesn't, then, you know, whatever. I'm not that beaten up about it. And at the very least, I'll know where the fan sits in terms of the importance to both the players and the owners in the baseball world. However, like I said, that is from a, you know, casual fan, somebody who covers the teams, obviously, but baseball is not my number one sport. For baseball fans who it is the number one sport, does what's happening now matter or make a difference to you? Like, the fact that these negotiations have been gone on, and partially, yes, it is about player safety, and it is partially about how do you come back from the virus and how do you ensure that everyone is as safe as they can be. But based on what we've seen from the offers and the details in the offers, it's more about money. It's more about something else. Is this just like a necessary evil that like every league goes through so you don't view it negatively? Because I feel like this negotiation in particular, maybe it's the timing of it, maybe it's the public nature of it, whatever, seems to be getting received pretty poorly out there. Is it just a lot of loud casual fans who wouldn't have been locked into baseball anyway? Or are there baseball fans who are having their voices kind of join this din and say, you know, what what the sport is doing right now is an embarrassment.
I think that I can only speak for me. I can't speak for every fan. What this does for me is tell me that I will not be supporting the owners
okay.
in any way that I can.
Even with the DH thing.
I am still going to watch baseball. And I'm still going to watch random baseball games because it's an escape for me. Mm-hmm. It's fun for me to get a chance to just observe the game of baseball and talk to myself almost because it's a Tuesday afternoon and everybody else is at work. And just kind of think out baseball strategy and that kind of stuff. I like doing that. What I won't do is buy apparel.
Okay.
What I won't do is go to games in person and purchase tickets because I think that that would be lining the owner's pockets.
Okay.
And I will not do that for a group of people who are at their core doing their best to hold players at their will. And for eight of them, should be like legitimately shunned from baseball.
Mm.
So to me, they're all a bad group. Eight of them are just significantly worse. But all eight of them, I don't want to affiliate myself with them. So I will watch baseball because
mm-hmm.
I like the game and I like the players. But I don't care for the owners anymore.
Okay. So let me ask you this. And I'm not trying to convert you. I've already gotten the win on Russell Wilson, so I'm good with whatever else happens moving
forward. Yeah, you filled your quota for tonight.
I did what I'm supposed to do. The players have said with the hashtag when and where, right?
Yes.
They said, let's make it happen. Saturday is conceivably a deadline for this to come together. Because that's like inside a month, effectively, of when the start to the season would happen. Does the player saying when and where in the event that this deal is rejected and they are forced by ownership to do a 48-game season, right? Does that change how you view it besides it just being the owner's fault and an owner's problem? Not saying that you would buy merchandise or anything like that to begin with, but that your anger would be more split rather than directed mostly towards the teams.
I don't think that it changes my anger totally. I think that the when and where comment was meant to be bold. The when and where comment kind of came off a little bit crass.
Mm-hmm.
But it also was, I mean, if you look too deeply into it, I guess from a psychological level, it's kind of I don't want to say a cry out, but it's kind of more along the lines of, can we please get this thing done?
Mm.
And I know that when they say when and where, and then the owners come up with this, and then they say, no, we don't really like this, it does come off as if they're being hypocritical. But it also, to me, when they say when and where, the owners have to provide some sort of an agreeable terms. Like, both sides have to come together and give up a little bit. They have to relinquish a little bit of this, you know, tightrope that they're playing tug of war with.
Right, whatever it is. Yeah.
But I think that the players have come in good faith that the owners will concede a little bit, and I don't think the owners have on the counter proposal.
610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. On Twitter, it's Joe Torti at 97.5 The Fanatic, at Tyler Zuli. Yeah, so I guess Major League Baseball, and this is from an article on CBC, claims that teams can't afford to play without fans and pay the prorated salaries that were called for in the March deal, which included a provision for, quote, good faith negotiations over the possibility of games in empty ballparks or neutral sites, which seems strange. Using the term the teams can't afford is curious language. It's very, very strange language. But I also saw that the teams, or that Major League Baseball, was saying things are not happening in good faith on the players' side. I'm trying to find where I saw that and what specifically the language was used. Because it is getting to the point where each side is just pointing at the other one and saying, oh, they're not playing fair. And like I said, to me, the whole thing has just gotten gross, to be completely honest with you. The whole thing has been something that I have not enjoyed watching play out, and it's soured me on both sides, even though, based on the math and the number crunching that I was doing, got no problem putting the owners in the driver's seat here for who to blame. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. And let's do that with Brian and Bluebell next on The Fanatic. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, I love your show, and of course I love baseball like you guys do.
Thanks, Brian.
I think that they could have baseball. They just have to probably just have to wear masks when they come up to bat. And but I think there's an interesting problem when it comes to these owners.
Mm-hmm.
That the money's gotten just beyond. You pay a guy $300 million for a ball player. It's mm-hmm. just not right. That's just the way I feel. There's a lot of good players, and I'll tell you one thing. I had a chance a couple years ago to watch a Villanova baseball team, and boy, those kids were good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd pay $20 a ticket to see them or more, because it was in a very nice atmosphere, a very homey atmosphere, and I did not have to fight Philadelphia. It's just different than when I was a kid. I mean, I remember Connie Mack Stadium, and just the money situation wasn't thrown out of proportion, and it's really messing things up.
Well, so Brian, I guess how do you kind of deal with that? Because there are lots of people that feel like you do, that the salaries have gotten inflated and there's so much money being thrown around. But as the TV deals increase and the revenues increase for these teams, you know, the partnership between the players and the team suggests that the players should be, you know, compensated accordingly for that. So like how do you figure out what's fair and what's not?
There's a certain amount of money that you need. I mean, $300 million. Next guy's going to want $400 million, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of good ball players, I'm sure, that are missed. The hungry ball players, like when I watched that Villanova game, those pitchers were darn good.
Mm.
And they weren't thinking about money. They were just thinking about winning.
Well, I get that. And Brian, thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate it. The issue that I have, probably any other year besides this year. This year it's different because you only had 5 rounds in the draft, right? But you got a 40-round Major League Baseball draft. It's possible that people slip through the cracks. I'm willing to concede that ground, but not overly likely that people would slip through the cracks. Like the best ones make it. Even the highly drafted players, if you don't make the the proper progression, the proper steps, you don't get to the big show. And it's not like everybody in pro baseball is making all that money. It's when you make the show, when you make Major League Baseball, that's when you get the big time money. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. So here's what I was looking for from Rob Manfred. And Tyler, you let me know if you buy this or if you don't buy this. Equally important, I had been hopeful that once we got to the common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to the owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances. Is that something? I mean, if you think he's lying, then that's one thing. But does that muddy the waters a little bit, knowing that there could be a $1 billion grievance on the table that maybe wasn't before?
Yeah, I'm sure it certainly does. I think for me, the issue that I have with what Manfred said was they're not working from a spot in good faith or whatever the exact quote was.
Right, that they decided to end good faith negotiations.
Yeah, you did that a long time ago. You did that a long time ago when you're not paying the players what you negotiated back in March. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you have any ground to stand on at this point.
Makes sense. We'll continue to discuss this, and of course, your voice can be heard as well. 610-632-0975. It's the Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Torti on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, Joe Torti Show, 97.5 The Fanatic. Producing insider Tyler Zuli is hanging out with us until 10 o'clock as we are we're continuing hanging out here. The discussion regarding compensation for Jamal Adams rages on in the Twitter comments of the hypothetical question: how many Eagles would be considered untradeable in a deal for Jamal Adams? A lot of people's lists are way, way too long. I have one. Tyler's got three. I've seen as many as 10. Got to get that corrected. Andrew in Valley Forge is next on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's going on, Andrew?
How you guys doing? I'm on the Bluetooth, so can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you sound okay.
All right. Listen, I was thinking about baseball and, the possibly not having a season this year. And I was a little depressed about that. But then I was starting to think about, like, why am I depressed about it? And then one of the callers that called up a few times ago, he was talking about just the pay that's kind of maybe gotten a little out of control and it's making things a little difficult and unwieldy. And I started thinking to myself, I'm like, you know what? I kind of agree with the guy. I mean, baseball is one of them sports, I believe. I mean, I played it my whole life. I feel like it's one of them sports that's unlike any other sport. It's half of it's about atmosphere, under the lights, outside. I mean, it's one of the only ones that goes on. They don't call it a stadium. They call it a stadium, but they call it playing at a park. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's outside. You go for the smells. You go for the lights. You go for summertime. So, like, let's just say we got two pitch aces making like $25, $30 million a year these days. The best guys, you're hoping that they throw a two-hitter. I don't want to watch that. I mean, it's stuff like that. Like, I'm not necessarily sure that we need to pay, like, the best of the best to play baseball, because half of it's about the atmosphere, I feel like.
Well, I mean, the atmosphere, I'm right on board with you, Andrew. There's a lot of stuff about going to the ballpark that makes it awesome. But, I mean, what I would say, too, is that's the reason that the Mike Trouts of the world are making $400 million, you know, to make it so that those two hitters don't happen.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying there. I just think, because of the Mike Trout going up against the guy that just got paid by the Yankees, Cole.
Garrett Cole. Yep.
Garrett Cole. I feel like, you know, yeah, they're going to cancel each other out, but that because they exist, you know, we might not go to the ballpark this year, and the ballpark was half the whole thing.
I see.
So I'm just thinking, like, you know, like the guy said, he likes to go watch Villanova. I got to be honest with you. I don't know how much differently I view a game between Villanova and St. John's or the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh or, you know, the Florida Marlins. It's all outside in the summertime to me. I mean, that's just me. I can't speak for everybody. But
no, like, I mean, I think that's a lot of the appeal, Andrew. And thanks for the phone call, man. I appreciate you you calling in. I wouldn't say that it's the salary's fault that we're not going to get play like fans in the stands, though. I would say that it's because of the global pandemic that has more to do with it. However, your point stands that if there is no baseball, certainly those salaries play a role. No one forced the owners to make those offers, though. And that's what I continue to go to anytime people talk about, oh, this guy's not worth that. Mike Conley's contract is insane. Bryce Harper's contract is insane. Who forced you to do that? Like, who had a gun to your head and said, if you don't sign this guy to this contract, then you're going to lose your life or your business or whatever? No one did. That's why, like, to me, one of the compelling arguments against a salary cap is, like, why do you need protection from yourself? Like, the Oakland A's and the Pittsburgh Pirates have been doing this for a long time. If you don't want to pay somebody, don't. And then you see what the ramifications are, of course. But they don't have those bad contracts. Don't have any wins, but they don't have those bad contracts. And in baseball, more than I would say just about any other sport, buying championships is completely possible. It's completely possible. It's not the only way to go, but we've seen it done. And so that's why I look at him like, I get that these salaries are inflated. My father-in-law is an old-school baseball guy. He said, no one on my team would ever get big contracts. Like, okay, I understand that. I get it. What's the alternative? You better be really unbelievably good at scouting. You'd better have an unbelievable manager. Your player development had better be elite level. Like, you got to find ways to add it all up and make it happen, because spending money on these big contracts tends to be the way that once these players get outside of team control, that's how they switch arenas. 610-632-0975 is your phone number to join the conversation. What do you think, Tyler? You looked thoughtful there for a moment.
Well, you know, when you mentioned your dad saying that nobody would ever get a big contract.
In-law.
Your father-in-law. Sorry. Apologies to your dad. Apologies. To me, that doesn't make any sense, because even if your scouting department is top-notch, even if you have a run of success where you have, over the course of 10 years, the maturation and promotion of Cole Hamels, Carlos Ruiz, Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, and Pat Burrell, and I guess to a lesser extent, Shane Victorino, you still sign somebody like Brad Lidge to a big deal,
right,
to complete your team. You sign someone like Pedro Feliz to, it wasn't a big deal, but he got more money than he probably should have, because you're looking for a defensive stopper at third base and somebody who can handle the bat a little bit. That team was uncharacteristically homegrown.
Right, that's true.
Most teams are a little less homegrown and have one or two superstars. Or one or two high-paid players.
Sure, yep.
I mean, the Houston Astros, $35 million for Justin Verlander.
Yeah,
what did it do?
And a lot of it was homegrown.
Right.
But $35 million
for
Verlander.
But what did $35 million do? Completed the cycle.
Yeah, got you all set. And that's, I just experienced this. I was looking for a very specific item to purchase. And the item is not easy to find. And so I can understand what the item is worth and say, wow, some of these prices that people are trying to get you to pay are just absolutely insane. But you're like, I want this, and this is what the inventory is. I don't have a ton of options. If you want a number two pitcher who's from free agency, you know what that costs. You know what a number two pitcher costs. You know what I need a five hitter. You know what that costs. You're paying. You're overpaying, perhaps, but you know that that's just the cost of doing business. If you need it, like you said, Pedro Feliz, you need a defensive third baseman. There's not a ton of those,
right?
Got to get them.
Well, and you mentioned bringing a number two. You pay a number when you get to free agency. The luxury of free agency in baseball, more specifically than any other sport, maybe the NBA, because the NBA pays out some lucrative contracts too.
Yeah.
But when you get to free agency in baseball, after your time and service numbers and all that add up, as a number two pitcher, you get paid like a number one.
Absolutely.
As a number one pitcher, you get paid like an ace.
Yes.
As an ace, you get paid like, I don't know, godsend.
Yeah, you have like country buying money.
Right.
That's what you have.
So everybody is overpriced in free agency, because that's what free agency dictates in Major League Baseball, because players are effectively under team control for nearly 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you're drafted out of high school, it's almost 10 years.
610-632-0975. It's true. And that's why, like, it's hard for me, considering the fact that you're giving up 10 years, whereas in the NFL, you're seeing people get lucrative contracts after the first 2 years of their rookie deal.
You know, well, I mean, at maximum in the NFL, you have five seasons.
At the most.
And they're still making decent money because they're first-round picks.
That's exactly it. I get why it's a tough pill to swallow. My problem is, like, what's the alternative? What's the solution? Because we've seen what it looks like. I guess I pointed out the A's. I pointed out the Pirates. I pointed out there's lots of teams that will not spend any money. You see how well those teams do. And you, Tyler just brought up the homegrown Phillies in 08, right? Then you saw the team the year after that, the 2009 New York Yankees, purchase a World Series. Like, that's what it looked like. So you can get it done in more than one way. Like, that's just the way that it is. That 09 Yankees team, very, very little homegrown talent on that team.
Well, I mean, you think about it too. Like, even the following Phillies teams, 09 maybe not so much, but you get into 10 and 11, did they not try to buy one too?
Of course.
I mean, they made trades, but they signed Raul Baños as a free agent. They
brought in Holiday,
of course. They brought in Cliff Lee twice. They brought Roy Oswalt in. They brought in Hunter Pence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of the, of course, a lot of these were trades, but you are trading assets that you consider to be valuable to get that run. So
right.
Did they buy it? Not necessarily, but it's
almost.
It's not homegrown.
It's not homegrown. That's right. And so that's what I mean. I feel like that is where some of the disconnect comes in, and that's, you know, there's more than one way to get it done. The only way to not get it done is to do what the Phillies have been doing recently and, like, kind of spend, you know?
And draft poorly.
And draft poorly and trade away the P word that Tyler likes so much, the prospects, you know?
Phonies.
Tyler loves every prospect. Not unlike our friend Pat Egan, who's stalking the hallways here. 610-632-0975. It is the Joe Torti Show. One more hour remaining here on the program. Spend it with us right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.